Welcome to Charting the Course, a podcast from Full Sail Capital, dedicated to providing you with insights, assurance, and confidence to grow and manage generational wealth. Full Sail Capital is a fiduciary registered investment advisor managing more than $1 billion with a focus on integrity, competency, and transparency.
My guest today is Stacy Murray. Stacy is a wealth management advisor and a CPA with a background at one of the big four accounting firms. In this episode, we talk about the strategy of tax loss harvesting and the benefits it can provide when executed correctly. I know you'll enjoy our conversation and hope it serves you along your journey. Stacy, thanks for coming by again. So we are going to talk today about tax loss harvesting. Whenever I say that, what comes to mind for you?
Tax loss harvesting is an opportunity that is allowed by, you know, under IRS guidelines, right? Mm-hmm. It is where somebody is able to sell a security that's in a loss position. So they're realizing that loss, right? So the loss is not realized until you sell that security. So they've sold the security and then they go in and buy a different security.
A substantially different security is the IRS definition, I believe.
Correct. Substantial different security. They purchase that and then they hold that going forward, but they've been able to realize a loss.
Why do I want to realize a loss? That just kind of seems potentially a little counterintuitive. Why do I want to lose money?
And let's back up even one more step further. Tax loss harvesting can only work in taxable accounts.
Okay. Yep. Mm-hmm. So I do not want to lose any money in my 401k and my IRA. This strategy does not apply in those accounts.
Hey guys, I just don't want to lose any money. So whatever y'all got to do, just keep my accounts up.
Sounds good.
Okay. Thank you.
So yes, again, backing up, you've got taxable accounts and then you've got your qualified accounts. Your qualified accounts are your traditional IRAs, your 401ks, your Roth IRAs. So there's no benefit in doing tax loss harvesting in those accounts.
Okay.
The benefit mm-hmm. really comes in a taxable account. And you're using that taxable account and you're planning to withdraw money. So to withdraw money, you are going to have to sell some securities. You probably are going to sell securities that have been in a gain position. And so when you sell securities that are in a gain position, you have a realized gain. Mm-hmm. By tax loss harvesting in times when the market, like a good example is when we saw March of 2020, right? Last year in April of 2020. Full Sail was able to go in and harvest a lot of losses during that time. And by doing that, when our clients later in the year were selling securities, you know, for extra income or Christmas presents or whatever it was, they were able to sell those securities at a gain, get that money out, pull it out. So let's say they sold securities that were $100,000 and they had a $20,000 realized gain. We were able to earlier in the year in March or April of 2020, realize $20,000 in losses. So you have that $20,000 gain offset by a $20,000 loss. The net impact to Uncle Sam is zero. You don't pay any taxes on that.
Okay, so that would be essentially, I'm not trying to look for losses, but when they happen, I want to try and do something. Is that kind of what you're saying with the strategy?
Right, and I think a lot of advisors put themselves out there as, oh, we can all do tax loss harvesting. There's a lot of tax implications, and I think it gets bucketized into a general, I can do tax loss harvesting, I can. One of the things that makes Full Sail Capital so unique is the way we invest, right? And so, and especially Dexter, I mean, you know all about this, but the way we invest is through ETFs. And so what we're able to do in March of 2020 or April of 2020, we invest in the energy ETF through Vanguard. Mm-hmm. And so we saw that that was down. And what we were able to do is still stay in the market, sell out of that Vanguard energy ETF and go in and buy a Fidelity energy ETF. So we allowed our clients to still stay in the market in an energy ETF sector, but we were able to realize that loss. Then what happened that year, right? What 2020 was such a crazy year. Everything rebounded.
Yep.
And if you wouldn't have stayed in that energy sector, right? It rebounded. I mean, you know the numbers on that.
Hey, Dexter, speak real quick to the amount of time you're out of the market when you do the exact same thing Stacy just said. So you buy,
are you
sell an
about
ETF.
The avoiding wash sales? Is that what you're going for?
No, I mean, like if you are going to do that to my account and I don't want to lose any money, but I'll let you off the hook this time.
Thank you.
You're going to go into my account. You're going to do a tax loss harvesting strategy on it. You're going to sell an ETF and buy an ETF. How long am I out of the market?
Milliseconds. The amount of time that it takes the trade to get executed.
That's, Susie, that's huge to me.
Right. I think that kind of like what you were saying with how we invest is, yeah, the old cliche, time in the market over timing the market. And that's what we are trying to avoid. Is that answer what you were trying to say,
yeah,
there, Tyler?
Yeah, I think that's a, I think that's something that's important for people to understand and realize is that they're not out of the market. They're not missing, it could go down further, but they're not missing time being invested.
So, Stacey, I mentioned the wash sale avoidance. Do you know what I'm talking about there? And could you speak to what that strategy avoids?
Yeah. So when we were talking about the energy ETFs, right? Tax uh-huh. strategy allows us to be able to go in and sell the Vanguard Energy ETF and get into a Fidelity
energy ETF. They have a different energy strategy. So like we said earlier, they meet the definition of a substantially different security.
Right. So the benefit of that and the benefit of how we invest is we're able to do that. The struggle is if you own solo stocks, right? So you own, let's just say Devon, right? Local. Uh-huh. Own Devon stock. It went down with oil and gas. Everything's kind of gone down last 2020, but it's starting to rebound. We're seeing yep. crude prices go back up, which is great news. And so the struggle is if you sell Devon security on April 1st, you're not allowed to go in and buy it back because it's the same type of security. You can, if you go back and buy it the next minute or the next hour, you're not able to realize that loss. It's considered a wash sale. You have to wait 30 days to buy that security to have any benefits from tax loss harvesting. And you just can't do it. You cannot get the benefits that you're able to do with the way we manage money with ETFs versus single stock picks. You just can't do it. And that's been, you know, I started here in June 1st of 2020. So like 9 months ago. And I've been amazed how much that tax loss harvesting, how well we do it. And I think a lot of clients that have moved over to us, they say, you know, my wealth manager was trying to do it all in December. Well, if you look back in 2020 and were trying.
Well, so I guess, can I interrupt you there? Why wouldn't I want to do it in December, end of the year? What's the problem with waiting until December so I know what the market's doing?
So I think the struggle of that is you can do it in December, but you also have to do it when the opportunity is right and it presents itself. And so those firms that wait until December to do it, because they're like, oh gosh, we've had a bunch of realized gains. They've had to pull out money. We've got a bunch of realized gains. Where can we look for, you know, realizing these losses? We did it back in March, April of last year. When we see an opportunity, and I think that that's the software, everything, that's where I give props to you and Zach and everything that you guys are doing from the investment team. And I think that that's where we really do have the team focus here. I'm not just monitoring my clients' accounts. I know you guys are back there monitoring it. And when the opportunity is right, you're going to make the move for them. So when we get to October, November, December, we're looking at it and saying, wow, we've already realized X amount of losses for clients.
These are great points. I want to throw a question at both of you, because when I spent time, we'll say in the wirehouse, it was mutual funds. Now this was 7-8 years ago. So, you know, ETFs have definitely become more popular. Index funds have become more popular. How important is it that we invest in ETFs and not active mutual funds? Because what I always remember happening is at the end of the year, these mutual funds would send out their capital gain distributions, whether I did anything or not, right? So can you explain that process, what happens in a mutual fund, and again, the benefit of that ETF? And again, our philosophy, I think, is something that I would love to hear about.
Yeah. So I'll answer first kind of from a trading perspective, which is the way that ETFs and mutual funds are structured. You can't trade mutual funds in a specific lot. So any lot that you purchase is going to reduce your total cost and average cost across the board. Whereas, like Stacey was mentioning earlier, if there was a lot that was purchased at just a weird time in the market, you can sell that specific tax lot as opposed to having to sell the entire position. So that is one of the benefits of being able to, just in general, mutual fund versus ETF structure. But like you were saying with regard to the active managers are buying and selling the entire time with where the market has been going. Mutual funds, and especially active managed mutual funds, have seen significant outflows. So even though they have stocks that they may like, they want to hold, they've had to sell those appreciated positions at a gain and then thus distribute that gain to the clients who hold that active managed mutual fund. So I think that it's a dual structure with the inherent organization and lot structure of mutual funds and ETFs versus, yeah, and then just the active versus passive debate. You end up with an intersection there. Sorry, I went off on a nerd tangent.
No, that's what I wanted.
Stacey, do you feel like I missed anything
there? No, I think that that's valuable. I think the other thing that we definitely want to share with, you know, our listeners is, and again, you're going to hear it over and over again, but the CPA side of me has to tell you the tax benefits too, right? So if you have a joint account, a taxable account, let's say you're not withdrawing any money, but we still have harvested losses that year for you, you're able to take $3,000 of capital gain losses, and you're able to...
Does that $3,000 have to be short-term, long-term? Does that matter? Or just if they have $3,000 worth of losses, that $3,000 automatically sets their... adjusted gross income down by that amount.
Correct. Yep. They're able to record it as a net capital loss.
Regardless of the time, whether it's short or long term.
Correct.
Okay. And so essentially on that $3,000, what is the benefit to that $3,000 lost? And what's the mathematical benefit there?
If you, let's just keep it easy. If you made $100,000 in the year, so your W-2 is $100,000, we've done tax loss harvesting in your taxable account. You record that $3,000 and it actually reduces your AGI, your adjusted gross income. So your $100,000 would go down to $97,000 and you're paying taxes on $97,000 rather than $100,000. So it's a direct reduction to your AGI.
Okay. And so then let's say you've got a client with a significantly larger loss than $3,000. What happens with the rest of that? Because if you read articles, the argument is basically that tax loss harvesting adds no value. And really all that I'm doing is just delaying my gain. And I'm just going to use that loss to then sell off the eventual gain. Does that make sense?
It does. I think one thing, so if you have more than $3,000 in 1 year, you're able to carry it forward. So if you don't use, like, let's say you had $6,000, you could have $3,000 in 2021 and you can have $3,000 in 2022. So you're able to carry it forward. You're also able to carry it forward in offset future taxable gains that you've realized.
And I think, yeah, that's what I was referring to is the future gain. Essentially, I'm just going to end up offsetting it with my previous realized loss. And I really didn't create any value is what some people would say the tax loss harvesting strategy does.
Yeah, I think the other thing that you're adding, like, I think one thing to consider too is backing up long-term gains versus short-term gains. So long-term capital gains, just so we're all aware and on the same page, those are taxed at a reduced rate rather than your short-term capital gains. So your long-term capital gains, the normal tax bracket is 15%. So it's usually a reduced rate. Some will go up to 20. And then you have some low earning income. We saw some where that didn't have to take the required minimum distribution in 2020. So their income was actually lower. And so that capital gains rate was actually even lower than 15%. Mm-hmm. But one thing that's great is your short-term capital gains. So that's something that you've held less than 12 months in a day. You are taxed at an ordinary income tax bracket. So again, back to if you're in the 24% tax bracket, the 32%, whatever tax bracket you're in, if you sell a security that's in a realized gain position and you've held it less than a year, you're going to pay taxes at your tax bracket. So tax loss harvesting that we're able to do reduces those gains that you're going to pay in the higher tax bracket. So I think there's a huge benefit to be said for that.
Yeah. And I think that is the one of the things is the tax bracket arbitrage, if you will, where you can, like you're saying, if you just continue kicking that gain down the road until you pass, then you get to step up upon giving to heirs. Am I correct in that?
Yeah. So as long as you continue to effectively use tax loss harvesting, and you can probably speak about, I mean, we had some significant tax loss harvesting happen for our clients in 2020, and I think it'll be carried forward for at least a couple of years for a lot of our clients. And so we can continue to carry that forward. And as more opportunities arise, we're going to continue to do tax loss harvesting. And so you continue to do tax loss harvesting as that couple is needing to pull money out from their joint account to live on. They're able to do that. And then when they do pass, it is the step-up value that you referred to. So it goes to your beneficiaries. So it would go to your children at the step-up value and it is passed through the estate tax.
Tyler, is there anything that you feel like I've missed or that your clients have really appreciated about our tax loss harvesting strategies?
No, I mean, for me, I echo kind of what Stacey has said with the investment team that we have in place here really has allowed me, you know, some peace of mind. being able to relay that to our clients and our partners or referral partners out there, our CPAs that work with us, our attorneys that work with us, they see that and they see the depth of the team. And for me, you know, 2020 was a year in which it was my first full year of being at Full Sail. And so if March of 2020 had happened in March of 19, I would have been on my own solo handling everything, you know, by myself. And that would have been a completely different experience than what it was, knowing that we had a process in place. We had a strategy for every client based on, you know, their advisor's input.
Which I feel like goes back to what Stacey, you were saying about not waiting until December, and more or less whenever you see the opportunity, regardless of when it presents itself, you need to be able to capitalize. Is that what kind of the both of you were saying there?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think one thing to add, you know, as I reflect on this and I look at myself, right, as a client, and am I doing what I'm telling my clients to do? I think one of the things that I'm really focusing on the next 5 years is making sure I'm growing a joint account, because there is so much benefit that you can do in joint accounts through tax loss harvesting. So just to re-echo, you can't do these unqualified accounts. So I think the perfect scenario, perfect solution for clients to have when they go to retire is some in a traditional IRA, some money in a Roth IRA, and then some money and a joint account that allows you to do this tax loss harvesting. And so I think if you're sitting there and you're trying to think through your buckets of where you're going to put your money this year, as we're in, you know, 2021, starting the year off, where am I going to bucketize and where am I going to focus? And I think if you're looking at it going, I'm going to try to maximize out my 19.5 into, maybe you split it, you do half into your traditional IRA.
And you're saying 19.5 for your 401k contribution,
yes.
Right?
Yep. So 19.5 for your traditional 401k and your Roth 401k at your employer. So I would divide that by two in theory. Have some money in both of those. And then if you're able to, go ahead. Anything is better than nothing. We tell clients to start contribution planning and make sure that you're doing that. And so $200, $300, I would put that into a joint taxable account. And that's where you're really going to reap the benefits of tax loss harvesting. I see clients that are in retirement right now, and the benefits of them having that joint taxable account with tax loss harvesting, especially in 2020, is insane compared to yeah. the benefits of what they had in a traditional IRA or a Roth IRA.
Yeah. And along the lines of buckets, you know, I'm going to get a random question out of you before we go. What is something on your bucket list that you have yet to accomplish? So for instance, so for me, I want to be on SportsCenter for something positive. I don't want to be the guy who rips a foul ball away from a small child. So that's something on my bucket list, is making SportsCenter for a positive event. Is there anything on your bucket list that is still out there to be accomplished?
I would love to go to the Masters. That's on my bucket list. So yeah.
As a spectator?
Oh, yes. Of course, Dexter. Hold on. Yes.
I was about to have a whole nother episode on Stacey's strategy for the LPGA and becoming the first woman at the Masters, because I think that's phenomenal. So more power to you.
No, I would love to be a spectator and draw the ticket. And
that's awesome.
Watch. Yeah. Not maybe a practice round. Practice rounds are.
Nah.
Yeah.
The real deal. Real deal.
That's awesome. Thanks for coming by today, Stacey.
Thank you, guys.
All opinions expressed by the host and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Full Sail Capital. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. Clients of Full Sail may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast. If you enjoyed today's conversation, please review and subscribe through your preferred podcast platform. Have a great week.